Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is December 1st, 2016. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Holiday is upon us, so it's give the gift time. Check out the Salieri Report. At this time of year, every subscriber gets to give one complimentary Salieri Report. It's going to be 3 months long this year. So whoever you give it to will get the annual wrap-up. They'll get the opening first quarter, all the juicy things, the emerging multipolar world, precious metals market report, a great one with Rappaport in February on pedophilia. So a lot of great stuff. And that's so each subscriber can, you can give someone a gift for Christmas gratis to the Salieri Report, and it's something we like to do for you every time at Christmas. So check out the commentary tomorrow and let customer service know who you'd like to give your gift to. The Joseph P. Farrell Crowdfund will launch next week. We got held up as all the sponsors, like a straight group of bowling pins, just got knocked down. We all got flattened by the flu, but we're all back up. We'll finish the video. We have a great website and hope to launch that next week. Joseph's birthday is in January, and the Salieri Christmas donation will be in the till. So we're going to launch. We've had some generous contributions, so we're going to launch with we hope about $3,000, and we're going to be shooting to certainly get the first phase done by Joseph's birthday. I did an interview with USA Watchdog based on my new commentary called The U.S. Presidential Election, The Productivity Backlash. I strongly recommend them both to you. They're up at Salieri.com. And I'm headed on December 12th up to Montana for Christmas and New Year's Eve. And if you're interested in having a lunch in Kalispell or Missoula, let me know and we'll see if we can arrange it. I'm going to be in the Swan Valley in western Montana. And then a commentary up on the website I want to point out to you for anyone in Louisville, Kentucky. We're trying to see if there's enough interest to do a first quarter lunch. Great request by one of our subscribers in Louisville. See the post at Salieri.com. Our theme tonight is the strong dollar. The U.S. index, dollar index, which was down for most of the year, is now up 2.2%. We've broken through the $100 line. It went up to 102, is now backed off to 100.95. We're now up 26.2% since the summer of 2014 when we were at 80. So that is a big move. The dollar continues strong. If the break through the 100 line really represents a breakout, we'll see over the next month or two. We could see the dollar headed much stronger, as much as, 106, 110. There are several factors at work here. One is market rates in the U.S. are going up, so we're looking at higher market rates. And, of course, money that's getting negative interest rates and sovereign bonds all over the world is coming in. But also there's the promise by the new administration of lower tax rates and bringing the $2 trillion that's sitting in corporate cash balances abroad home. And that could bode for very aggressive news for the dollar. I used two quotes at the top of my commentary on the U.S. presidential election, the productivity backlash. Let me read them to you. One was from a voter in Harrisburg explaining why I voted for Trump. Because the part of America that grows your food, produces your energy, and fights your wars believes that the country needs a course correction. The second was a very prescient comment from the Saker in the third quarter emerging multipolar world on the Salieri Report. Quote, there is a huge fight happening inside the United States right now between two factions. One faction wants to sacrifice the U.S. for the sake of the empire, and the second faction wants to sacrifice the empire for the sake of the United States. Well, the faction that wants to sacrifice the empire for the sake of the United States just won the election. And they're going to pull money back into the center to rebuild the U.S. economy, and they're willing to compost empire to do that. As I said, one of their main tax or main platforms to get growth is lower corporate tax rates, 15%. They want to bring the corporate rate from 35% to 15% and bring those cash balances home. To do that, they also want some relief on Dodd-Frank, some of the restrictions that make things very risky for the corporate executives. Unfortunately, a lot of times when you clean up financial fraud, you just create more rules for the innocent. And then, according to the Kiplinger letter, there's plans afoot to really relax the restrictions on crowdfunding, which, among other things, is going to be great for real estate exits. So now let's turn to the transition. I'm getting a lot of questions about what I think of the transition. The transition is designed to do several things. One, it's designed to pull from the top quality, sort of most respected players on the conservative Republican side. And it's also designed to bring in a group of essentially deal doers to engineer economic growth. It's clear that the transition team has very deep knowledge of White House personnel issues. In fact, they've had a team working on this on both the Democratic and Republican nominees since spring. Now with Pence taking it over, it's being very competently run. There's a lot of deep knowledge there. We see complaints that a lot of the appointments are people who are wealthy, and that conflicts with a populist tone. I don't necessarily agree. Trump's building a machine to shift trillions in equity investment and really make a major turn in the aircraft carrier. He needs people who are comfortable doing that. They need to have the networks and they need to have the command of the machinery. And the question is not whether they have deep knowledge of machinery and equity money. The question is, will they make the turn in the highest and best good for all concerned, or will they just use it to make money for themselves and their networks? So the question is really back to the one I keep asking in the Saleri model, which is, are we about return on investment, or are we about total economic return, or are we about both? Because we need to be about both if it's going to be a truly successful, lasting change. So there's the machinery, and then there's what the machinery is set to. So let's keep going and look at some of the team. As I said before, the previous Pence-Ryan congressional juggernaut with the vice president, the RNC chairman going in as chief of staff, and him being from Wisconsin and close to Ryan, who's staying as speaker, gives a real congressional juggernaut. They've just added to that the fact that Price is going in at HHS, and now Mitch McConnell, the speaker, the Senate leader's wife, who was Secretary of Labor during Bush, is coming in to run transportation. So now you can add McConnell to that juggernaut, and they've really got a remarkable intimacy that they need to get a lot through Congress. Now, let's turn to the economic team. They've nominated Ross and Mnuchin, Ross for Commerce and Mnuchin for Treasury. And it's interesting, if you look at Clinton, she was a lawyer who basically worked in government. So think of Clinton as a lawyer who was a government bureaucrat. And she basically knew debt, a little bit about government money, as things turned out. Clearly from the debates, you could see she didn't really understand the economy. Trump is a private deal doer, and he plays for equity gains. He understands the economy. He's got a deep understanding. So does Ross and Mnuchin. Ross in particular, if you look at the kind of private equity deals he's been doing. I'm not disturbed that these people are personally wealthy necessarily, because in fact, you need to have a certain amount of personal wealth to protect you. And so that you're not pleasing people and looking for the next deal or the next job. In addition, you need deal doers. Jack Ma said, very rightly, the head of Alibaba, war starts when trade stops. Well, the way you get trade going is you just get people starting to do deals. You have to turn on the deal machinery. Remember, the United States is energy and food and water self-sufficient. Or, you know, if it's not completely on energy, it can be relatively quickly. And so you have a lot to work with if you're willing to compost empire. Let's take a look at Steve Mnuchin, because if you look, Trump's been meeting over the last 2 weeks, not only with Mnuchin, but with Gary Cohn, the number two at Goldman Sachs, and Lloyd Blankfein, the chairman of Goldman Sachs. So I've asked our webmaster to put up links to my old Goldman Sachs pieces, Goldman Whack-A-Mole, and some of the follow-up pieces, as well as our piece on financial coup d'etat. If you look at who engineered the financial coup starting in the 90s, it was essentially one of the key players was Blank, Fine, and Cohen running the fixed income division at Goldman Sachs and helping to engineer the kind of both the housing bubble, the strong dollar policy, and I suspect some pretty massive government bond fraud. And Mnuchin was part of that operation, ending up getting promoted up to vice chairman and then head of that division in the 90s. And so he was a critical Blank, Fine, Cohen, Mnuchin. You're looking at a critical part of the team that basically, with Rubin and Summers, who Rubin coming out from Goldman Sachs, Rubin and Summers sitting at the White House and Treasury in the Clinton administration, and Blank, Fine, Cohen, and Mnuchin at Goldman Sachs, they engineered the strong dollar policy, including the housing bubble. So you're basically looking at the team that engineered moving trains of dollars out of the money. You're hiring them back in to move trains of dollars back into the country. Presumably, if they moved it out, they would have a pretty good idea of where many of the bodies are buried on all of this. The rumors are Trump is talking to Cohen about OMB, if that's the case, and you get Mnuchin at Treasury and Cohen at OMB and Blankfein still at Goldman Sachs. You've literally got the financial coup team who engineered all the money back out, working to engineer all the money back. It's quite interesting. Mnuchin, his dad ran the equity desk at Goldman Sachs. He was a very respected partner who I met when I worked at Goldman Sachs as a summer intern in 1977. Now, where Mnuchin's going to run into problems is he has to be confirmed. All of Trump's appointees from the assistant secretary level up have to be go through a Senate confirmation. And Mnuchin, as you know, clearly participated on the pump side of the housing bubble, but also on the dump side. He left Goldman in 2003, put together a distressed lending hedge fund with Soros, and then spun out, did his own with Soros backing. They ended up buying a distressed bank with government protection deals and then proceeded to do a whole lot of foreclosures. The headline today, Trump Treasury picks Steve Mnuchin's bank foreclosed on a 90-year-old woman's house over a 27-cent error. The woman's lawyer calls the action criminal. So I suspect it's going to be interesting to see if the Democrats decide to go at Mnuchin on this. The Wall Street Journal described Mnuchin as an underwhelming candidate. Both Ross and Mnuchin is underwhelming. So unlike some of Trump's other picks, he doesn't have the same gravitas on the Hill. So it'll be interesting to see if the Democrats try and do something here. It's sort of the perfect thing for someone like Elizabeth Warren to take after. He sold the bank to CIT, where he's on the board. CIT is a middle market lender. That gives him a pretty good beat on how and why bringing down the tax rate can help a lot of people in middle America, or a lot of businesses, middle market businesses. There's an interesting note in the Wall Street Journal pointing out that since the Trump win, S&P is up 2+%, regional banks are up 18%. Also pointing out one of the stocks that got hurt the most on the Trump win is Smith & Wesson, which went down over almost 20% and then leveled off. It's now down 12%. No one's made as much money as for the gun companies as Obama has done for the, you know, gun ownership in America, what the NRA could never do. It's quite interesting. Mnuchin is also vice chairman of a Connecticut hedge fund, ESL Investments, run by an old school friend of his. They're the lead investor in Sears and AutoNation and other sort of heartland American investments. So he's got he should have a pretty good perspective on, as I said, if you want somebody who understands the machinery, he should have it. He's close to Wilbur Ross, the nominee for Commerce. Ross has his own private equity firm, but for 24 years worked at Rothschild Inc. So between and of course, Steve Bannon, the White House strategist that everybody's so upset as, was at Goldman Sachs and mergers and acquisitions in 1980. in the 1980s. So basically, you've got this group of guys who are Yale, Harvard, Rothschild, Goldman Sachs, throw in his son-in-law Jared Kushner, who's Harvard. I'm sure the Yale and Harvard endowments are in there someplace. So you've definitely got you've got the heart of the of many of the investment networks. Now, and of course, add the Penn Endowment because Trump went to Wharton. Add Romney. Now, interestingly enough, what you might not realize is in the fixed income division at Goldman Sachs, one of the most prevalent sources of employees for the fixed income division was the Mormons. The Mormons were deep in Goldman Sachs, and their most prevalent population was in the fixed income division. I know because I worked there again in the summer of 77. The Mormons are also very deep in the casino business. It was the Mormons who financed the original investment in Las Vegas. They read Sally Denton and Roger Morris's book on Las Vegas. You will learn a lot about the Mormons Church deep relations with the casino business. So in that sense, both Romney and Trump both come out of the casino business because Romney is very definitely a representative of the Mormon investment networks. The Mormons, both intelligent networks and investment networks, are deeply global and very deeply important. So if you throw them in with Goldman Sachs, who they're very close with, as well as with Rothschild Inc., you're basically talking about pulling together an unbelievably powerful amount of equity and intelligence networks. I suspect somewhere behind there are the oil companies. We see Trump clearly indicating he's going to be very supportive of the fossil fuel industry. If you look at what was happening with climate change and some of the policies towards coal and fossil fuel in the last 2 years of Obama, I think wouldn't surprise me if very, very quietly the whole fossil fuel group and their line in the intelligence agencies were pulling very hard. Wouldn't surprise me if covert ops at Treasury was pulling hard ultimately for Trump. Now, if you take a look at the possibility of Romney for Secretary of State and you combine him with Wilbur Ross and Mnuchin, you've got a real equity juggernaut. The problem is that one of the most important qualities you need in the Secretary of State is loyalty. And Giuliani wants that position. Giuliani was clearly critical to winning the election for Trump. As I said, I think NYPD and the New York FBI office put it over the top, and that's very much thanks to Giuliani. And there's clear indications from many people in and around the transition that they think Giuliani would be more loyal both to Trump and the Make America Great agenda, whereas Romney would be more self-serving for himself and his networks. So that's a tough one. It's down to four candidates. Bob Corker and Petraeus are still in the running. And so it's going to be very interesting to see whether Trump goes with loyalty or he goes with basically buying the Mormon networks onto the team. Finally, he's got tough guys on the enforcement line, Flynn, National Security Advisor, and General Mattis just was announced it as Secretary of Defense today. So big money likes clear direction and support from the military intelligence line, and that's clearly what he's doing. Both Flynn and Mattis, very deeply respected, and of course he's got Sessions at Alabama Senator, came out early for him at Department of Justice. So let's, as I said, he's building a machinery that can engineer the kind of major money turn he wants to engineer. The question is, can he do it, and what are the risk issues? There are three big risk issues. The first is the team needs a much more detailed vision of Make America Great Again that they can share. It's one thing to say Make America Great Again, but it's all in the details, and you really need your team to share a common vision of what that means. Wall Street Journal had an incredibly brilliant recommendation on Gingrich today. At one point, it looked like Gingrich was going to be in the running for Secretary of State, too. But the reality is, if you look at sort of the traffic jam on Secretary of State, that's not going to happen. So what the Wall Street Journal recommended was that you have Gingrich lead a commission on how to basically re-engineer the government to get the policies in place. And actually, it's a brilliant idea because Gingrich is very, very intelligent. He has a deep knowledge of government. And if you look at the kind of details you need cross-government in 21 agencies to make this thing go, Gingrich is the right guy to – you need somebody to cross all the different agencies and be constantly forcing them to integrate and work together. And Gingrich could really – a lot of it is just digging out and getting the detail. And Gingrich is somebody who could pull that together. And so normally I laugh and poo-poo at commissions. But in fact, Gingrich, given that kind of mandate to really make the great – you know, make America great, a vision go is a great thing. I have to give a plug for Gingrich. If you look in the 90s, there were two people in Washington making a concerted effort to make America great. One was the team at Hamilton Securities, my company, and the other was Newt Gingrich. It was the Clintons who really basically – Gingrich is running around saying, give every kid a laptop and get small business and entrepreneurship going. And in fact, that was basically destroyed by the Clintons doing the – internet bubble and the you know, the financial coup d'etat. So if there was anyone who was really plugging and working hard on the detail of Make America Great in the 90s, it was Newt Gingrich. So he's got a lot of basis and background and deep knowledge on how to do that. And so you need somebody to help you pull that more detailed vision together. And Gingrich is somebody who could do it operationally, who could sell it, who could communicate, who could really make something happen cross-agency. Anyway, so number one risk, team needs a shared vision of Make America Great Again that's a lot more detailed than just lowering the corporate tax rate. Okay, the second risk is that they do a great job of engineering up the big stuff, but not the small. If you're going to build a really powerful economy, you need small business to get the boot taken off of its face and revive, including entrepreneurship at the small business level. It's small business that's going to create the jobs, not corporations. And it's also going to be small business that's going to help you win the Senate and congressional seats in 2 years. You have an incredible opportunity. There are going to be 18 Democratic Senate seats that are up. So if you want to translate this into real political power that gives you the 80% landslide you need to get your full agenda done, then you better do a great job at small. And that's one of the reasons Gingrich on a commission could be really good, because he could put together the detail. Because if you look at what small business needs, it's a lot of relief from regulation, a lot of relief from things that keep small business from accessing equity capital. And so if Trump is sincere about wanting broad-based growth, you really have to be building out that detailed mandate for broad-based growth. Trump right now is on a thank you tour. He was in Cincinnati tonight. That's a very smart thing to do, particularly after he and Pence engineered the carrier deal. That's a very smart political move. They saved 1,000 jobs. The Wall Street Journal did a good job today of poo-pooing the cost of the tax benefits and whether or not it was a smart thing to do to intercede, the implications being government interceding with the affairs of private business is bad. Wait a minute, Carrier is a subsidiary of United Technology, which does a huge amount of government business. It's I'm tired of people saying these are private businesses when you look at, you know, basically major government contracting and sales to government businesses. So the reality is, if we're gonna deal with the economy, we have to stop pretending that things are private when they're basically feeding huge amounts of money from the taxpayer. And that's why you've got to have teams of people who can look at not just return on investment, or, you know, government policy, but really total economic return, because we're going to have to realign things between private businesses and government so that we increase return to investor and we increase return to taxpayers. And it can be done. There's plenty of opportunity. So risk number two is that you don't give the full detailed attention you need over the next 2 years to small business. Now, lowering tax rates will help them too, but that's not enough. So you got to be supportive of all the productive people. Some other ideas that could help you is, again, focus Gingrich on a balanced plan, ease the crowdfunding rules. Kiplinger letter says that's going to happen. Would be great. One Democrat I would absolutely try and pick up is Bob Lytan. He has years of experience both at OMB and in government, but he ran research for the Kauffman Foundation, and he knows more about entrepreneurship and small business than any economist in this country, in my opinion. And so he would be a great one to pick up. And his qualifications include the fact that Elizabeth Warren got him fired from the Brookings Institute. So if you're interested, see our Salieri report with Bob Lytan. I recommend him to this administration strongly. Finally, let everybody on welfare, food stamps, or housing subsidies start businesses in their homes. You know, undo all the restrictions that keep them from really engaging in entrepreneurship. I used to have something when I worked in government called the anti-plan, which was inviting everybody at the state and local level to send up their requests for regulations and other requirements they wanted to be relieved of. And we needed a major ongoing anti-plan effort because the regulatory complexity is a nightmare. And if you look at what's happening, Obama's trying to stuff through, I think, you know, billions more in regulation. I just saw a tweet from Marsha Blackburn, my congressman, to that effect. Finally, set up infrastructure so small firms have access to competition. If you're going to have great infrastructure building programs, then you want to make sure small firms can compete for the activities that are going to go on locally. Don't have affirmative action, just let them compete. It's a matter of setting the process so they have access. And of course, I continue to believe that place-based financial reporting of the government budgets and financial statements would be an incredible boost to small business and reengineering government programs. And I've published a letter to Marsha Blackburn, my congresswoman, on Salieri, and I also published it in the second quarter wrap-up. But there's, you know, many more things, but there's a great amount that the Trump and the administration can do to really level the playing field for small business. Finally, the third risk is, are we going to do real investment or are we just going to do prioritization? Prioritization is my word for privatization when it's not done at a market price. If they bring in money and use that money to invest in infrastructure to clean up the water so Flint, Michigan doesn't happen. You know, if they really invest in killing Common Core and educational testing, if they you know, if they relieve the non-cash items that are killing the productive people like Obamacare fines. So here's the question: are we going to make real investments, or are we just going to take government assets and turn them over to big corporate money cheap? And that comes back to what I said before about are we going to focus on return to investors or total economic return or both? So there's return to investors, there's return to taxpayers, there's return total economic return, and we need to optimize both, and we can. And that's why it's so important the team have a shared detailed vision of what Make America Great Again mean. And they really need it by the time they go in for that tax package. So here's the thing, the jury's out on the team. I really don't care whether or not they use the team that did the financial coup. I care about how the team performs in terms of whether or not the money brought back in gets a positive both total economic return and return to investors. If it just gets a positive return to investors, then we just have another round of you know, of corporate pirates, and it's a bust. if they get a really positive total economic return, then we're talking about really rebuilding the North America economy. So the one thing I will say is one of the things that was happening was the Democratic Party and the color revolution was destroying productivity in this country. So that stopped. That's a good sign. Jury's out. Every one of us should be doing everything we can to make sure whatever goes down, it's something that is a win-win for both return on investors and total economic return. So let's see what happens. Bottom line, Trump's building machinery to really switch the money in a very, very big way. So he's pulling in the machinery that can and will do that. And the jury's out as whether it will serve the people or not. I believe he's sincere in wanting to, but wanting to and doing it is a whole nother thing. And that's why I think having this Wall Street Journal idea of having Gingrich doing a cross cut is a very, very good idea. And it's a way that Trump can get a cross agency check, reality check throughout the first couple of years. Okay, money and markets, US dollar index, as I said, up 2.2%. That's 26.2% since the summer of 2014. With it, we're seeing a turn down in the bond market because one of the things that's driving the dollar up is higher interest rates. The oil jump that happened this week, oil jumped yesterday 9%, that hit the bond market hard. So we're watching fixed income really come down. It had been one of the star performers this year. The long treasury, which had been up as much as 20%, is now almost flat. It's up 0.37% for the year. The intermediate treasury ETF is now up 0.6%. That had been up more than 8%. The bond aggregate, that's mostly corporate, up 1.63%. And junk still doing well at 11.27%. I can never get over it. Calling it the Trump surge, the U.S. markets, equity markets continue up. Look for the U.S. equity markets to be looking for the Electoral College vote in December, and then the inauguration, and then the tax package. Those will be the big sort of hurdles for them. We now see the S&P up 9.4% for the year. Home builders still not up there. They're down 1.45% for the year now. The European ETF, Vanguard ETF, VGK, now down 5.18% for the year. Germany down 3.5%, and the developed markets minus North America down 1.7%. China has been putting on capital restrictions and the currency's falling. Their equity markets, large cap up 7.29%, small caps now down 0.75% for the year, and the emerging markets up 9.83%, reflecting the real concern. That's down from over, they were up over 18% at one point. That's down reflecting the concern about the small, what's going to happen in the emerging markets with the US dollar bear trap that we've talked so many times before. Commodities now up 8.6% for the year. Gold and silver continuing to correct. Gold now up 9.93% for the year. Silver up 18.73%. At one point, that was 40%. So quite the volatility this year. Gold now down 2.41%, still struggling for the total year. Although, as I said, we jumped, the price jumped 9% yesterday when Saudi Arabia and OPEC announced production limits, Russia and Putin coming along with OPEC to do production limits as well. My description of this is basically Saudi Arabia, starting in 2014, had basically declared a market share war against the U.S. Frackers. Price came down a great deal. I wonder how much of that was the desire of the national security state to really pinch Putin. Either way, OPEC has clearly thrown in the towel. I think that, as I said, reflects the changes in the administration here. The U.S. administration has made it clear that they're going to support the oil and gas industry. My guess is they're going to relieve some of the regulatory changes that have literally driven the U.S. coal companies almost out of business, several into bankruptcy and out of the trading markets. It wouldn't surprise me if you read the descriptions of some of the movement to sort of integrate the climate change accord into government plans and the implications for the oil companies' securities disclosure and cost of capital. It wouldn't surprise me, again, if the oil companies were, and certainly the coal companies, were very much behind the Trump victory. All eyes are on Italy now that Brexit has shocked the global establishment and the Trump victory even more. Italy's in for a referendum looking for changes in their constitution to help them basically protect the banks. When I was in Italy, everyone was talking about the fact that Morgan Stanley had written the proposed changes. Not a very good look, if you ask me. But essentially, the vote is this Sunday, and it looks like the prime minister will probably not get his way. And then we could end up with him resigning and the Italian banks in a crisis. Anyway, so keep an eye on what happens in Italy on Sunday, because that could make the European banking story even more interesting. There's a very important story going on in India, with India canceling larger denominations and trying to drive a significant amount of the currency float into the banks, literally trying to move much more into the banking infrastructure. It's all part of the push for a global currency and a big push to get the Asian infrastructure in position for a more centrally controlled system with the digital currency. And I want to spend more time drilling down and looking at the story. I put out a great chart on my Twitter feed on the expectation of how much it's going to increase Indian bank deposits. Another very important thing that's going on, and I suspect we're going to be talking about it a lot this year, is what I call the death march of the major media. I would say the U.S. presidential election has done a great deal to make it clear to the global audience that the American media is much more, as Greg Hunter said, a psyop than a media. He came out of working for several companies in the major media before he started USA Watchdog. He's extremely frustrated with them. What's interesting is, having completely destroyed what credibility I think they had on the election, instead of learning from that and trying to improve, they are doubling down on multiple strategic errors. And meantime, what I should point out is we're watching lots of layoffs. So even despite all the attention they got in the election, the business is hurting. They're losing market share. Instead of doing stories on how we make America great again, instead they're got lots of stories on trying to talk about what's wrong with Trump and how badly Trump is doing. We have, of course, the grief from losing the election. We see Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, who never ceases to amaze me with his complete obliviousness to reality, writing a column saying that he felt homeless in America. This is a man who lives in a $10 million mansion in Bethesda. I put up the article. Somebody had the good fortune or the intelligence to point out, writing an article, you know, with a picture of his home in Bethesda, saying, you know, how could a man say he felt homeless when he's living in a mansion with his own, it appears to be a tennis court and swimming pool. Anyway, so you take a look at the picture of the mansion and you think, you know, this guy is so clueless, you don't even know what to say. But of course, the worst is we now see an effort starting with the Washington Post to claim that one of the reasons Trump won was because of all sorts of fake news websites, and also accusing the fake news websites of fronting for the Russians. I can't tell you how completely absurd this is, but I do want to credit John Rappaport with giving them the idea. Of course, his website is titled No More Fake News. And of course, he was referring to the corporate media, and of course now the corporate media is trying to use it to refer to a whole series of websites who, good or bad, whether you like them or not, they've brought a whole lot of truth and brought a whole lot of transparency to America. And they are pulling major, major market share away from the corporate media because the corporate media is failing. But the idea that Ron Paul's website is fronting for the Russians is so absurd. You can't even believe that they're trying to say this. Now, who is they? The interesting thing is Jeff Bezos bought the lead position in the Washington Post, but he did it in approximately the same time that he got a huge contract from the CIA. And if you look at the amount of equity created by the profits rolling off the CIA contract, it was more than enough to make that investment in the Washington Post. So I've always believed that Bezos was basically facilitating a CIA investment and control in the Washington Post. Now, if you look at the history of the Washington Post, it's a much longer story. That tie between the CIA and the Washington Post is very old and deep and very, very close. So maybe Bezos is just the latest round. But clearly, if you look at the people who are using entrainment, who have designed the soft revolution and the color revolution to really engineer many, many things globally, including in the United States, this is the group that now thinks, you know, mommy, mommy, the Russians made me do it, is going to work. And I just think it's so patently ridiculous and absurd. I just don't see how it works. Ultimately, this has got to be decided by market share. The consumer controls, because all you have to do is just turn it off, walk away, stop, cancel your subscription to the New York Times, cancel your subscription to the Washington Post, just walk away. That's what's going to decide this. Don't turn it on. So the consumer is going to decide what happens here, and my prediction is these guys are going to lose major, major market share, and two things are going to cause it. One is the price of a material emission. If you sit down and think of how many people in America now have autistic children because major media did not warn them that heavy schedules of vaccines has a very significant correlation with autism, that's just one example. But you're talking about so many people who've been hurt because major media was running a psyop instead of telling them what they needed to know to be intelligent users and consumers of all sorts of different things in the world. So I think as the consumer realizes that these guys are lying to them in a way that is costing them time and money and even their life, we're going to see a walk away. The second thing is what I call bubble stupidity. Somebody sent me a link to an interview that Anderson Cooper on CNN was doing with another commentator who had made the case for Trump. And he was saying, doesn't it bother you that Trump listens to this crazy website, InfoWars, which is Alex Jones's site, and they're crazy and they say stupid things like 9/11 was an inside job. And as you listen to it, what you realize is Anderson Cooper has no idea. I mean, he's completely ignorant of what really happened on 9/11. And if he wasn't, only somebody who was completely ignorant would have been stupid enough to say that. And when you realize that Anderson Cooper is living in a bubble and he has gotten to the point where he believes the bubble, you realize, wait a minute, why am I listening to people who have no clue what's really going on? I can't afford to do this. You know, my time is too valuable. So again, whether it's the price of a lie or a material mission or just pure bubble stupidity, you know, the reality is the consumer, I think, is going to pull away in a major, major way. One other comment before we leave the topic of media, and really a side note, I have to give compliments to Rupert Murdoch. He keeps doing things on the side of right and justice. If you look at his company, it owns Wall Street Journal. Wall Street Journal is the newspaper that literally destroyed Theranos, the Silicon Valley blood testing darling. And latest disclosure on Theranos is getting a lot more attention because, in fact, Mattis, Secretary of Defense nominee, was on the board. Turns out Murdoch had a big investment in Theranos and clearly didn't stop the Wall Street Journal, the paper he owned, from tearing the company apart, which it well deserved. Okay, I want to talk about a story called Pizzagate. If you don't know about Pizzagate, it's a you have a lot of researchers on the web sort of throwing information around and digging into it. It's potentially a scandal related to sex slavery rings and pedophilia rings around and associated with the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton campaign. Now, if you look at the sort of the hint of pedophilia, this has been going on since the beginning of the Clinton campaign because of a fellow named Jeffrey Epstein. If you look at the review I did on a book review called Trafficking, Epstein was a convicted pedophile who was deeply associated with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. And there was a clear sort of question as to whether pedophilia rings were part of raising money for the Clinton Foundation. The second thing that happened was Breitbart, before he died, sent out a tweet that looked like it was accusing John Podesta of being associated with such activities. But finally, with the leaks of the Podesta emails, Podesta being the Clinton campaign chairman, we had the Podesta emails coming through WikiLeaks, and they had a whole lot of bizarre references to something, to a pizza restaurant and various activities. And you have many investigators wondering if this is all code words for something related to essentially sex ring activity. Anyway, so you've got lots of scuttlebutt. We have not published, we've published very few references to it because a lot of it is just allegations swirling. But the reality is it doesn't seem to be going away. And I think that Pandora's box has been opened here and you're not going to be able to get the jack back in the box. There are too many private investigators going at it. But it also looks to me that some professionals want this to happen. Now, it's too early. You need to get through the Electoral College and the inauguration before anything like this is really going to go anywhere. But I'm going to give you an early guess, and that is I think the reason Trump won the election is he got Clinton backers to stand down before the market started to trade a Trump victory in and around November 4th. And I think that's when the NYPD and FBI office basically was able to give Trump and Giuliani what they needed to say, you either stand down or we'll use the equivalent of an information nuclear bomb, which my guess is, you know, came through the Huma Abedin emails and NYPD, and then the FBI was able to get a hold of them. And that's part of what got the election won by the Trump team and got a lot of Clinton's backers who I think had the capability to do more rigging to stand down. But my guess is that sort of nuclear information bomb is still hanging around. And the reality is if you want to get massive global equity networks on board to head in one direction, then there's a whole world of old leadership and various people that you do not want trying to toll booth you and hold you up and get leverage and get a piece of the action. And the way to deal with all of them is to basically say, okay, you know, we've got this witch hunt going called Pizzagate. Do you want to get targeted by it? It's very effective way of getting everybody to get on board or get gone. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody's building up to a witch hunt that forces everybody to get on the growth train and get out of toll boothing the growth train, which a lot of that leadership is want to do. I've booked Rappaport to do a Solari report with me on pedophilia in early February because if I'm right and this is not going away after the inauguration, it would be a very good thing. And after our annual wrap up, to have a very serious talk about pedophilia, because there's a lot of noise bumping around. And I think it's very important that you understand the real deal on pedophilia, because it's a very important story and it's been going on for centuries. Finally, the Jill Stein recount. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate for president, got about 1% of the vote, is trying to do a recount in 3 states. I don't know what her motives are. If you look at the speed and the amount of money she is coming in, it's not a grassroots. She's operating a front, and some operation is pouring money, and it's likely Soros and the Clintons. I think it represents terrible judgment by the Clintons, and they're probably doing it to appease a lot of their fans and people who were all worked up. Only a government bureaucrat would waste money like this. I think it's terrible judgment. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It remains to be seen what's going to happen to the Clintons, because until the inauguration, nothing's going to happen. But after the inauguration, you've got multiple states, multiple foreign governments, the FBI, the NYPD, and the IRS, all with open investigations. If you look at the compliance and tax issues at the foundation, there's enough to keep, 100 enforcement teams bearing the Clintons with paperwork and hundreds of millions of dollars of fines for the rest of their lives. So the question is that going to happen or not? It's an opportunity for a lot of enforcement folks to make money. And there's really the potential for a major mess, or if Pizzagate really does get going, that could make the mess even deeper. What you do see is that if you step back and look at what happened with both the presidential campaign and then what happened in the Senate and the House, the big Democratic donors are pretty irritated about how much money has been wasted. So they've spent a fortune, and not only did they get wiped, they got seriously wiped. And if the Republicans are smart, it's going to get really worse in 2018. So you have the Republicans controlling House, controlling Senate, controlling many more governorships, state houses. I mean, it's quite a dramatic sweep. And if you look at the money the Republicans ran, certainly Trump ran, a much more economic, streamlined, effective campaign, so paying much less money for the votes that they got. Anyway, to my amazement, the Democrats stuck with Pelosi as House leader, which I think was a terrible mistake. So you've got Pelosi as the House leader from San Francisco, Schumer as the Democratic Senate leader from New York City. It means that everyone is from the big money coastal areas. Ryan, who was challenging Pelosi, was a congressman from Ohio, and I think they would have been much better off with a congressman from Ohio. Finally, I just wanted to mention housing prices hit a new high on the Shiller Index. If Trump gets his way with the tax package, you're going to see a lot of money coming into real estate. Now, interest rates could dampen some of that, but I expect if the administration gets its way, we're going to see price inflation in houses. So if you're thinking about buying a house, you may want to take that into consideration. Very good news. The U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit just issued a decision on Friday saying that federal and state laws in Hawaii could not overrule local communities that wanted to prohibit commercially grown GMO crops, genetically engineered crops. So it's basically saying local communities have the sovereign right to stop GMOs. Now, that's at the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Ninth Circuit. It means only the Supreme Court can overrule them. Obviously, other circuits could come out differently, but that is a very, very important decision. We're going to put it up both in topics and commentary. Finally, I wanted to point out a great book review by Jason Worth this week at Solari, Your Brain on Porn, Internet Pornography, and the Emerging Science of Addiction. We've been looking more at the intersection of entrainment technology with all sorts of purposefully created addictions, pornography, gambling, video games. I mean, one of the things we're seeing is that this kind of technology, the economics are powerful to creating essentially addicted consumers. Addicted consumers are loyal consumers. And it's something I want to focus a lot more in 2017, both how they all work and then what we can do about it. The more I talk to subscribers about themselves and their family, the more I'm seeing that, you know, this entrainment problem is very widespread and very little understood and breaks down into all these various different areas. And so we want to explore that some more. So take a look at that very chilling, important article, book review. Our hero this week are the 2,500 firefighters who've come from all over the country to fight the blaze in western North Carolina. All over the country, some of the greatest sort of civic organizations are the volunteer fire departments, and they're doing a wonderful job despite every effort of Agenda 21 to make life harder for them. And these are people that are marvelous people. They make a great contribution. And so whether volunteer fire departments or paid fire departments, firefighters are very important people in this country. And as we've seen in western North Carolina, and then, of course, the blaze in Tennessee, we absolutely need firefighters. And coming together in this way for these really large fires that are happening is that's a very important thing. One of the articles on it points out in western North Carolina, most firefighters work 14 to 21 days, 16-hour shifts per day. That is hard work. Okay, our movie this week is Let's Go to the Movies is a 2015 documentary called Sherpa. This film tells the story of the Sherpa people of the Himalayas in eastern Nepal. And those are the people that have traditionally lived next to and climbed. They're the climbers who climb Mount Everest, and they're the climbers who populate the expedition teams that go up Everest. When I was in Nepal and lived in Asia, I was around and had opportunity to meet Sherpas. I will tell you, they were just an absolutely remarkable people. The documentary tells the story of the cancellation of the 2014 and 2015 climbing seasons. And one of the things it described is the extent to which what is happening on Everest has gotten out of alignment with the spiritual values of the Sherpas and their relationship to the mountain. And it very much underscores the story I tell in the little video we made for this week's interview talking about Jung's story that I've published in the commentary, Karma Means You Don't Get Away With Anything. The Sherpas have always provided enormous spiritual protection to the groups climbing Everest. The Sherpas believe that Everest is an entity. You know, think of it as a spiritual intelligence of its own. If you look at what's been happening, whether it's the government getting greedy in terms of the money they make from expeditions or the number of expeditions that want to try and climb every year, just simply the pure amount of the people and the absence of any understanding of the spiritual forces at work or the Sherpa's approach, you have a system that's gotten way out of balance, and it's not surprising that you have started to see very bad and dangerous accidents. And it's funny, as you watch the documentary, it's fascinating to watch the different cultures collide and to see how the whole situation has gotten out of balance. It clearly can be brought back into balance. The question is, how do you get the government and the Western expeditions to understand the need for a spiritual appreciation and approached and very balanced economics. The economics got way out of balance. There was no real insurance fund or compensation fund to protect any of the Sherpas who got hurt or killed, which is crazy. I mean, it's a no-brainer to understand you're going to have much more powerful and sustainable economics if you provide for insurance and compensation funds for such things. Why they haven't done it, I'll never know. But it's a very interesting story about how things got out of balance. And the question is, how in the world can you get these three different cultures to let the Sherpas lead them back into something that will be balanced and work for the sort of highest and best concern of all going forward? And big question mark, but fascinating documentary. And if you're a climber, a very fascinating documentary. Our interview this evening is with a wonderful anthroposophist, Thomas Meyer, the founder of Perseus Publishing in Basel, Switzerland. When I was in Zurich, I had the opportunity again to meet with him. This time we recorded an introduction to Steiner. Steiner comes up for many, many reasons. He was an Austrian philosopher who's written and published a massive body of lectures and books. Most people today will run into Steiner as a result of biodynamic farming, but also because of Waldorf education. If you have a young child and don't want to put your kids through Common Core and educational testing and mandated vaccines and the other risks of what I consider to be unacceptable risks of public schools, Waldorf education is a very fine alternative where you have a good Waldorf school, and there are many of them around the country and around the world. The third place you run into Steiner is he wrote and spoke tremendously about spiritual and invisible forces at work on our planet. And his spiritual science or spiritual movement is called anthroposophy. So whether it's biodynamic farming, Waldorf education, or understanding the invisible, Steiner is a remarkable, remarkable research. And Thomas, resource. And Thomas is a marvelous intellect and thinker, and did a great job of helping me really introduce you to Steiner and his work. I wanted to do it at this time because we are doing the food series, which is for me a very important body of work. And one of Steiner's great books is The Agriculture Course, a series of lectures he gave in 1924 at the request of European farmers. And it's really what created biodynamic farming. And in connection with tonight's interview, Ann Watson, a wonderful subscriber, is in the process of recording all of the Agricultural Course lectures. And we've published that along with a link to a website that provides the full text online. So if you're interested in diving deep into the biodynamic agriculture, I would really encourage you to listen to the Agriculture Course. We have about three or four more to go, and so we'll keep posting those as Anne has recorded them, and I would like to thank her. She has contributed that to the benefit of all of our Solari Report, both subscribers and readers. They're free, available to the public. So we publish that in connection with the interview. Okay, Ask Catherine. A lot of questions tonight. Here we go. First of all, thanks for the links. Lots of great links. Hello, Catherine. I'm reading your post-election blogs and want to let you know how I appreciate your ability to summarize a very confusing world. I especially value the U.S. presidential election, the productivity backlash. I will be reading it many times. I want to ask your thoughts on the activities of George Soros, specifically why isn't he in jail? Isn't it against the law to incite riots, disturb the peace, or try to overthrow the government? Further, how should the new administration manage this harassment? I am for the peaceful protest and the right to redress the government, but injuring other people and destroying property cannot be tolerated. Here's the reality. Soros is acting on behalf of a syndicate, which would probably include U.S. intelligence agencies. Remember, there are seven U.S. intelligence agencies. They're very fractured. There are many different interests, including corporate interests. Here's the reality. Remember when I talked about the Pizzagate witch hunt? If you have players who are creating this kind of trouble and it's stopping you from getting a growth agenda, and I assure you riots stop you from getting a growth agenda, if you're going to turn on a witch hunt to tell everybody to get on board with growth and stop behaving badly or doing toll booth, this is one of the ways you do it. So I suspect everybody's going to be invited to get on board with growth, and if they don't, they'll be gotten out of the way. And but it will have to be probably done much more covertly than overtly. Overtly would just take too much money, cost too much money, take too much time. Also, is there any hope that Donald Trump would rescind the Patriot Act and or the NDAA Act? Both are unconstitutional, in my opinion. What are your thoughts? I don't know. A lot will depend on the briefing he gets post-inauguration. And he's going to focus on getting growth. So he's not going to want to create a lot of fights over those issues. He's going to want to get growth first and then figure out what he does on other things. So as I said, if they win big in the 2018 elections, or he goes way up in the polls, then he can get more of his agenda. Will you have more blogs on how to work locally for a productive village, city, county, for instance? If I had a city budget, I'm not sure I would know what to do with it. We have a plan underway to switch Brad Edens off of doing top picks to working instead part-time to focus on local, municipal, and local community development. And I'm hoping that comes to fruition, because I think we are going to want to have a lot more content on that score. So if you're seeing links on municipal and local community innovation and actions, please send them in. I'm also looking forward to scenario thinking with Eric Best. Thank you for your tireless efforts in the cause of righteousness. I hope you feel encouraged or even vindicated by the election results. I must tell you that I feel very relieved that the Bushes and the Clintons have left the stage. Now, it's still too early to know what's next. My favorite cartoon on the election was a cartoon that said American Roulette, and it had two guns. One was Clinton Roulette, and it had six bullets in the gun, and the other was Trump, and it had three bullets. So three bullets is better than six, but it's still dangerous. So let's see. As I said, we're watching machinery put into place, and the question is, will it optimize both return on investment and total economic return, or just return on investment? So, you know, the jury's still out. Let's help them do everything we can to do both. The writer continues, I'd like to think we're not alone in our attempts to do the next right thing. We draw on the strength and guidance of a superior force. And then they post a quote from Streetcar Named Desire by Tennessee Williams, quote, sometimes God comes so suddenly, quote. That's a great quote. Dear Catherine, it seems to me that the obvious export from planet Earth must be Earthlings, billions of them. That we're entrained and fattened up for the journey seems only to add weight to this possibility. After all, we wouldn't want someone to drive the drone that does their cleaning and personal care, etc. I can't believe aliens have needs that aren't that much different from our own. Why waste billions on developing AI when you can persuade your slave to do it for you? Slavery is endemic to our species. My question is, do you think that this is a likely or possible scenario? This is a little tongue-in-cheek, but I've followed your discussion about an open economy with interest, and it does fit the facts, even if it is not the only possible explanation. I just don't know. I would say that the soft revolution process and trainment over the last year was one of the most horrible things I've ever had to experience in the country. It's a little bit like living through an energetic zombie apocalypse. So I can see why you're feeling the way you are about this, but I think we need to take a deep breath and, I don't know, focus on the positive for a while. Hi, Catherine. I know you don't recommend watching TV due to entrainment technology and whatnot, but are you aware of Shark Tank on ABC? Any opinion on it? It is entertainment, but also potentially inspirational for all the aspiring entrepreneurs out there. I've always enjoyed Shark Tank. On rare occasions, I've seen it when I turn on the TV in a hotel and motel, I've seen it. I think you can learn a lot from watching Shark Tank. In fact, we did a Solari report on entrepreneurship, and I had recommended Shark Tank for the Let's Go to the Movies. So it's gotten an official recommendation from me on the Solari report. Then a wonderful subscriber says, sends in a link and says, this is Jeff Lawton's article in Food Forest. He on the other hand, is an expert. He's the face of permaculture. Notice how he does not take the system he's pushing to the level of we need to use the system as entrepreneurs to pocket the IG Farb and this cabal. I've sent pushy emails to a few people in the alt media trying to get someone to cover this forcefully, but this is it for me. And then last thing, ever want to really delve into this or focus here? This guy wrote the most prominent textbook on the system. And then I sent him a note saying, Eric Tonsmeyer, who he had sent me a link to, came on for a Solari report and we supported his Kickstarter. So we're with you. You're right. Edible forest gardens is a great, great idea. Hi, Catherine. How do Trump and Congress fix Social Security and Medicare? Are they going to kick the can down the road? Oh, and then they said, did you know that in 1620, Thanksgiving, the total population of the American colonies was 2,302 persons? Enjoy your day. I think they're going to kick the can on Social Security and Medicare as while they try and get their tax package and growth package. So first comes growth. then somebody sent me a link to a German comedy based on a German novel that sold millions. Hitler Comes Back to Berlin in 2015. I've yet to see it, but I thought you and Joseph might find it interesting and humorous. The first thing Adolf Hitler does is search on Google for world domination. Hi, Catherine. Solaris has really helped me grapple with recent events. I've listened to archived interviews, read the Franklin scandal, J.P. Madoff, Dark Alliance, A Cruel and Shocking Act, Profiteering, etc. Wow. The magnitude of the corruption challenges my ability to comprehend. I love tech and have tracked the WikiLeaks. The link below is about a young man lesser known than Assange, but equally important to those of us who would create a better world. He dedicated himself to doing that, was persecuted for his actions, and committed suicide at 26. This documentary of his life takes 2 hours to watch, but he's one of those extraordinary beings that we will all want to honor. I believe you'll be very happy to know about him. Assuming he has not already come to your attention, you may wish to post a link to the video on Solari. The author is referring to the documentary on Aaron Swartz. We recommended it in Let's Go to the Movies. I reviewed it several years back. Aaron Swartz was everything you're describing, a remarkable young man, had done remarkable things for true media. But the one thing I have to point out, and I said this in my review, is I don't believe it was a suicide. I believe it was an assassination. I think he was murdered. And it was made to look like a suicide, which is very typical. Hi, Catherine. How do you read Trump campaign's manager, Kellyanne Conway, trashing Romney so publicly while Trump considers him to head the State Department? It strikes me as odd that it's spilling out in the open like this. Bad sign. No, I think it was an approved tweet. I think she did it with Trump's knowledge or the transition team's knowledge. It's all part of vetting a candidate and trying to get the discussion going back and forth, its way of running trial balloons in different directions. So I don't see it as anything other than the process. Somebody asked me a question about how to get a position in the new administration with somebody with serious credentials and resumes. Here's what I wrote. There are several flows that will get you to the right place. The transition team is the first. Before the inauguration, identify someone you know on the transition team or someone that someone you know knows. White House personnel. Once the president is inaugurated, White House personnel will be the avenue. Trump family. If you have an introduction to somebody very close to the president-elect or the Trump expert team, as the team gets filled out, there will be people in expertise-related positions, so advisory related to that particular area of function. If one were to promote you, that is the way. To accomplish what you need to find someone inside one of those four flows who will champion you. Hello, Catherine and all the Solari team. I hope you and the Solari team are safe from the fires in Tennessee. My prayers are with you. Yes, I'm 6 hours to the west of the fires. I'm on the western side of the state, and the fire's on the eastern side of the state. Very sad happenings there. Dear Catherine, I recently read the book you recommended titled In the Dark by Jason Bawden Smith, and it's a very important book. You mentioned that you had good results utilizing the Blue Shield device that he recommends in the book, but have you utilized the Quantum Bracelet device that he recommends that people wear on the wrist? No, I haven't tried it yet. Dear Catherine, with you mentioning how much we are living in a world of surveillance, a client of mine just told me the following story. He was involved in a financial transaction where tens of thousands of dollars needed to be wired to a bank, but someone had been surveilling the communication around this, and they sent wiring instructions that looked legitimate with the name of the parties involved in the transaction, but the instructions were for wiring the money to another bank. So the money was then wired, and then it was gone. Now, that is a very important, sobering story. I hope you take it to heart. Be very, very careful about what you put on email, particularly on an open basis. It's very, very easy to password protect files on the internet if you take the time to learn how to do it. And there's certain things you absolutely do not want to say on the phone or on email on an open basis. I've had and seen many situations where if you're selling a company, you never want to mention the price you will really take because that's in fact what you get. And the person skimming the intelligence is going to get the extra money that you would have gotten. Next writer says, I happened upon Obsolete, the movie on Amazon. This seems to bring everything I've been reading and studying about for years. The mouse experiment seems to be exactly what Agenda 21 is doing. Packing the population in apartment causes problems. You end up playing video games and making oneself pretty and are dumber than snot. One of the first examples of this was the housing, points to a particular housing development in Holland. I understand this housing experiment has turned into a failure, yet all of the universities are turning out planners that endorse this UN and Agenda 21 through the American Planning Association. So sad. I've tried to find the DVD to purchase it, but to no avail. I've heard about this, and I will make an effort to watch it. We did a show on Agenda 21 in 2015. It's in the archives, and I want to do something on megacities in 2017 because I think it's important to get more into this. Hi, Catherine. I've read a couple of sources in the last week stating that we're going to have a new currency. The current dollar will be for the world. In the U.S., we will have a gold-backed currency and receive a 50% haircut. Do you have any accurate and reliable information regarding the currency? There are two things going on right now. We're dealing with a dollar breakout, and we're dealing with a global effort happening in the U.S. and all over the globe to prototype and build out the infrastructure for a global digital one or more currencies. In the meantime, all the scenarios I've read about current reset are just fear porn, and just don't buy it, don't believe it. It's all a bunch of bunk. I'll never forget in the summer of 2014 sitting with several very intelligent, very capable people, very famous people telling me that the Asian elders were going to reset the currency, you know, literally in the next 30 days and the dollar was going away. And I said, no, 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 the dollar's not going away. The dollar's getting stronger. We're in for a huge rally in the dollar. And they looked at me like I was nuts. And of course, I was right. And, you know, the whole currency reset Asian elder thing was complete yaya. So my guess is what you're listening to is complete disinformation bunk. So be careful. But if you have any more questions, I need you to send me the specific link. But please be very careful about this kind of stuff. There's a huge business in fear porn and disinformation and all the currency sets and the Iraqi dinar and the Vietnam dong revaluations is all just fraud. Scams. Okay, in closing, next week, December 8th, we have year-end tax planning 2016 with CPA Patty Kammerer. I'd like to go through the list of everything you need to think about and do before the end of the year. Very important financial planning, household cleaning work that needs to get done. You need to attend to this, and early December is the time to focus. Then on December 15th, I'm going to be out in Montana with Harry Blaser, and we're going to do the next for the food series, A Culinary History of Christmas. And then December 22nd, the Best of Soleri, our team is going to pick our favorites from the year, talk a little bit about our accomplishments. And then the following week, a whole series, I'm going to pull out of the archives all the best stuff to help you prepare your new New Year's resolutions. So until December 8th next week, year-end tax planning 2016 with Patty Kemmerer. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.